Hysteria is brought to you by Books. This Mother's Day, give mom her flowers. She deserves the best. That's why you should send her farm fresh flowers from Books. That's short for bouquets.
And right now, you can get 25% off your entire Books purchase. Here's why everyone likes the Books company. Books is different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. They even have flowers grown on the side of a volcano,
which I love. Books has modern designs and unique flowers you can't find anywhere else. Books is simple. Go online, pick the delivery date, and you are done. Mother's Day is May 12th. Don't miss the chance to thank your mom. Order your Books now. And with 20% off, you can send some to mom, wife, aunt, and even grandma. Erin, I love my Books. I love a flower that lasts forever, and my Books arrangements really do last a full solid week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have some sitting on my kitchen table right now, and they've been there for several days, and usually when I buy them at, like, the grocery store, they're sort of, like, starting to crap
fade out
pretty quickly. Yep. Not with Books. They stick around. They look beautiful. I like how they kind of slowly open up and become even more beautiful as they sit on your, you know, wherever
Absolutely,
you display them.
Because they're that fresh. So go to Books.com and use promo code Hysteria for 25% off. That's Books.com, promo code Hysteria. Books, promo code Hysteria.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, you know what kind of summer I think it's going to be?
What kind?
Okay, so I don't think it's going to be white boy summer. And okay. I don't think it's going to be hot girl summer because people are still kind of like traumatized. I think it's going to be biker shorts summer.
Biker shorts summer. I can get on board with that.
Biker shorts are a wonderful article of clothing. Like, I'm wearing biker shorts right now and I'm like, this is delightful. They're not too short. They give your legs a little hug. They come in all kinds of fun patterns.
I mean, the only things you have to like your knees, I guess, to get on board with the biker short trend.
Yes, but here's the thing. If enough people are wearing biker shorts and there's enough of a diversity of knees, you kind of like lose your self-consciousness about your own.
I guess it's, you know, true.
It's just be brave, be bold, wear biker shorts. Who cares? But you're the only person that cares about your own knees is you.
It's true. It's true. Thank you for telling. I will remind myself of that as someone who was like, I don't know, are my knees okay enough for biker shorts?
They're fine. Wear biker shorts. You'll be delighted. This week, we are joined by Senator Mazie Hirono, Kieran Deal, and Priyanka Arabindi to tackle the following questions. Should more Republicans fear the revenge of Liz Cheney? Will Democrats pass infrastructure all on their own? Why do we love drama as long as it involves other people? And which host was at the center of a high school academic standoff? All this and more right now. And welcome back. Some news has happened.
Always does.
Again. Keeps happening.
On Wednesdays.
But this time the news had the good sense to happen before we started recording. So let's talk about Liz Cheney. Alyssa, do we feel sorry for Liz Cheney?
I don't think Liz Cheney even wants us to feel sorry for her, right? I mean, she burned the place down. Look, Liz Cheney had two choices, right? She could have capitulated and been like, oh, fine, I don't have to say the big lie is true, but I don't have to say the big lie is a lie, or whatever the actual logical expression of that would be. And she was like, no, fuck it. Guess what? This is the truth. Here is the truth. The truth is the election wasn't fucking rigged. The election was fair and free. And if we're not on board with a free and fair election, what the fuck are we talking about? It means then that we are at war with the Constitution. And so I don't think we have to feel sorry for her because I think she did exactly what the fuck she wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what you can do when you're a billionaire scion of a war criminal family, right?
You can. It gives you some freedom.
Yes, right. You don't. I mean, she can. If she is feeling sad, she can dry her tears with her money. But I don't feel like she's somebody who wants us to feel sorry for her. One thing that stuck out to me, first of all, a few things stuck out to me, but one thing that stuck out was that she gave a speech on the floor of the House on Tuesday night. So she got in on the A blocks of some of the primetime Tuesday night opinion shows, which is a canny move, like very smart, because then she got a whole night of headlines. She got a whole morning of like morning podcast headlines.
Before. Not just headlines, laudatory. Like, look at her go.
Yeah. And like, the thing is, she's not like, I'm not a dupe. You're not a dupe. Neither of us are like just brimming with bullshit professional pundits. Like, we both kind of see what's going on here. Liz Cheney isn't a hero, but she's something.
She's something.
She's something.
She's not a pussy.
She's not complicit. She's not complicit in this particular one bad
Correct.
Thing.
Correct. Which is a pretty big bad thing. That she is the utter outlier on, right? Mm-hmm.
Because Adam Kinzinger.
Yes, correct. Yeah. That is true. We can't leave him out, because he was actually outspoken about all this bad shit way before she ever was, you mm-hmm. know? But it is interesting, because there she was, Liz Cheney, Dick Cheney's spawn mm-hmm. on the House floor. And all those little bitch GOP House Republicans walked out one by one as if they thought in their heads it was the same thing as when all the football players went into the coach in the movie Rudy and were like, this one's for Rudy, and put their jerseys down. They thought they were doing that, but like in reverse, and it like wasn't even close.
Yeah, here's the thing. You know that really famous, well-used gif of the basketball player shooting a long three, holding his follow-through and turning around before he sees that it bricks off the backboard?
Yeah.
That's what I feel like Republicans are doing right now. Okay, so Liz Cheney is making this speech. I will do everything in my power to make sure that Donald Trump never returns to the White House. And that, you know, meanwhile, we have Republicans tweeting mission accomplished banners. We have Madison Cawthorn typing out, nah, 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 nah.
What does that even mean?
Goodbye.
Oh,
right. But like, seeing it, it's like, that's the thing you say, Madison. You don't type it. It looks weird. It looks very weird. But all of these Republicans kind of showboating. And it's like, you do realize that an incredibly powerful figure from an incredibly powerful family just basically offered to take any future candidacy of a Trump out duck hunting with her, so to speak. That if it were me, look, I don't like Liz Cheney. I don't like the Cheney family. I think they are bad. If I were a Republican, would I consider it strategically a good idea to fuck with them?
No.
Absolutely not.
Definitely not.
Definitely not. She has so much more power and so much more money and so many more connections than Donald Trump. Deep connections, generational connections. Like,
I mean, do you think they're missing the point that her dad started a war on a lie? Like, do they think they are playing here with someone who isn't smarter than them?
Yeah. Liz Cheney, I believe, for everything that she has done poorly in the past, from rejecting her gay sister to being generally on the total wrong side of almost every issue, Liz Cheney is not stupid. She is not stupid. And I'm interested. I love revenge. I love watching a good revenge.
Totally.
I'm
interested in seeing the revenge too. And also, it's like all those numbnuts who walked out of the House chamber last night forgot that Donald Trump has a lot less money than Liz Cheney.
Yes.
Like, so much less.
It's almost, I kind of have been thinking about this a lot. It's like, what is in it for them to continue to kiss his ass? Like, and I feel like it couldn't possibly be money. It's like a short-term rush of instant gratification. Like the same neurons that light up when you send a tweet that like a lot of people like right away, where it's like, wait a minute, I just spent, you know, 10 minutes editing a tweet that I could have been doing something else way more valuable. But this immediate rush of like, oh, people are
it's
noticing.
Endorphins, baby.
Right. It's like, you know, in that experiment with the rats where they had, they put rats in a cage and what they had a two buttons and one of the buttons gave them food and one of the right. buttons gave them cocaine and the rats just kept hitting the cocaine button until they died.
Who wouldn't?
I mean, yes, cocaine is a very addictive drug and it also makes you not hungry, but like I feel like that's what Republicans are doing with Donald Trump. They're just bashing that cocaine button over and over again. Instead of just being like, wait a minute, I should eat.
Wait, Erin, that may be the single best distillation of Trumpism ever that anyone's ever made. All those pundits on TV should give their money back because you just did it.
All I ask is that they donate it to organizations that A, preserve endangered species, and B, promote education and multiculturalism. All I ask.
I will be watching. I will be watching.
Okay, good. Give me the money, and then I will funnel it to organizations that deserve it. Speaking of organizations that don't deserve money, the NRA. You want to talk a little bit about the NRA?
Well, Erin, they're having a very bad, very sad week.
They are. And I kind of wanted to wrap this conversation in a toast to Shannon Watts. Of Moms Demand Action. I want to toast Shannon Watts. She must be having the best week. Speaking of rush of endorphins, she must be having just the best week. A federal judge just this week rejected the NRA's bid to declare bankruptcy and reestablish itself in Texas. That's also a victory for our friend Tish James. She's not really our friend, but she is in my imagination.
She kind of is, especially now that Cuomo's like, Tish James, I don't even know her.
Oh, yes. This Tish James has, like, and I mean this in a non-gendered way, giant brass balls. Tish James is not afraid of anybody. So basically, Tish James was successful. The NRA can no longer declare bankruptcy. It's a huge setback for the NRA. It means they just spent millions and millions of dollars on a failed legal battle, and that battle is going to continue on. Not great. Alyssa, how are you feeling about this?
Delicious. I think it's delicious. I love it. Because you know what this means, Erin? If they can't declare bankruptcy, it means that as they go forward, they are going to have to answer. Like, to me, being able to declare bankruptcy is like new broom sweeps clean, right? It's like, oh, well, we're bankrupt. Now we move on and we start over. And it's like, no, now they're going to have to answer for all those fucking suits that they bought that lunatic boss of theirs, LaPierre. I refuse to say his name properly. And the mansions and the yachts and the trips. And like at some point, Erin, at some point back, do you remember you and I, I'm older enough. What the fuck am I trying to say? I am just older than you to remember when Tom Brokaw used to have this segment on the nightly news called The Fleecing of America. And at some point, Erin, the people who contribute to the NRA and the people who got scammed by Donald Trump and went to make a donation and then just kept giving and haven't gotten their money back are going to realize they're being fleeced by some very bad people. And maybe at some point they'll wake up and be like, am I wrong? Am I doing the wrong things?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot going on there because on one hand, when someone is telling you everything that you want to hear and presenting a version of the world that either fits perfectly into your fears or your dreams or some combination of both, and you really, really want to believe that's real, and then you give them money, on top of that, you want to believe that you are not a dupe. Totally. So you have like these two very strong like psychological pulls. Like you want it to be true and you don't want to be stupid. And like, it just takes a really long time for people to be like, wait a minute, something seems off here. Here's the thing though. Look, Wayne LaPierre and other grifter types, like half of Donald Trump's cabinet, remember the guy?
More than half.
Oh, like most of them.
Most.
Like, remember HHS Secretary Price, who's like flying around visiting his son? It's just like, they were all just like total grifters. And despite all of this funneling of money that should be used for other things, for their own personal enrichment, they still look like crap, aren't introducing any beauty or interesting things into the world. If I were giving money to an organization and the head of the organization was using that money to like look really fucking fly all the time, I would be like, okay, I am a little mad you took my money, but at least you are completely dominating the Met Gala red carpet. You know, at least I have these pictures. With Wayne LaPierre, we just have these like secret suits that he never wore in public, but he bought with people's money anyway.
I mean, the man looked ill-fitting from day one. And if I were paying, if that were my money that I had given, if I had given like my $25, which was money I didn't even really have to give, but I'm so upset someone might take my gun someday because Wayne LaPierre is telling me they're going to take my gun. And then I just saw that he had some jankety suit that looked like, I mean, I agree with you. Like, he didn't even do good things with the money.
Right. Spend it on something cool, man. Like, it's just something, they always just spend it on dumb shit.
Buy a cool gun. I don't know.
Yeah, none of the guns are even that cool. Buy a cool gun that, like, has a safety feature and required a background check before you purchased it.
Yeah, or you that could would use... Or had digital thumbprint technology so that you couldn't, little kids couldn't just unlock gun.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we've got a long way to come with guns, but for now, it's really fun to watch the NRA kind of crash and burn. We're almost out of time because we have to talk to one of our favorites, Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii. But before we go, I want to talk about this headline on Vice News this week. It filled me with a feeling that doesn't have a name, you know, like Schadenfreude is a specific like shame joy. It's like shame at the, or joy at the shameful feeling of watching other people experience misfortune. This is an unnamed feeling. The headline is anti-maskers ready to start masking to protect themselves from the vaccines.
So here's the thing. When you texted this to me, I was like, oh yeah, I heard about this because up here I have a friend whose neighbors were like, oh, we want to see you. Have you been vaccinated? And she was like, we have. We are double vaxxed. We're good to go. They were like, oh. And she's like, what? They're like, well, you're still technically like contagious, so we can't be around you. And she was so confused. And they meant contagious. From her vaccination. They couldn't be near her because it would change their DNA, which I thought was just something that was hyperbole I saw on the news. No, it is true. She got it from Facebook and she won't be around them. And now they're kind of like, well, we're not going to be around you because you are dumb. So we're not going to be friends anymore. It's okay.
Oh my God. There's one in the wild.
Found one in the wild and I couldn't believe it. And that's her whole thing now. These people never wanted to wear masks and now they're like, oh, we can't catch it from you. So
okay,
we wear masks.
Where are these people in our fight to punish and rein in environmental polluters? Do you know how much more dangerous the chemicals are that are being dumped into our air and water?
Aaron, like, why are you being logical?
I feel like the thing is, I hear people being like, I'm worried that my DNA is going to get fucked up from this foreign thing. It's like, okay, you're halfway right. Because your DNA will get fucked up with foreign things, but this isn't the thing. It's all this other stuff. Oh my God.
It is more. Like, here's the thing. I think that you and I are both very reasonable people and we can see things we disagree with and be like, look, I see their point. I don't agree with it. This is something that when people talk about it, you're like, no, dude, come on. You're dumb. Like, this is, I don't use the word lightly, but like, catch a vaccine. And I guess this is the only vaccine. I mean, it's like, it's not even worth going down the rabbit hole of trying to dissect, but it is terrifying.
We need to pay science teachers a lot more money and we need a lot more of them. And we need to have like continuing adult science education. So people have a basic understanding that mRNA cannot jump through the air. And like, Jesus Christ.
It's not the chicken pox.
Look, we are a country full of people who are just not men of science. And it's really showing. It is really showing. But look, if this is what gets them to wear masks, they're not vaccinated. They're wearing masks. Good. I feel like we should maybe as people. So if you're right wing and listening to this, I don't know why you would be. But if you are, please cover your ears because I'm about to talk about a scheme with Alyssa. We should just make up lies like this all the time to get them to do what we want.
Like, we could just start a Facebook account and be like, did you know? that Donald Trump says.
If you wear a mask, you will not catch the vaccine from all the people that got the vaccine.
Which will mutate your DNA, like something that could only happen in a movie like The Matrix.
Yeah. I'm going to see a lot of Don't Tread on Me masks this summer, and it's going to be hilarious. I'll be wearing my biker shorts. Cannot wait. Okay, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we have Hawaii Senator Mazie Hirono.
Oh, hi there.
Oh, that is a really nice, what is that, wallpaper?
It is. So I record in what's known as my junk room. It's like the room where just everything we don't know where it goes, goes. And so this is just like a dressing screen that I ordered.
Oh, it's
from
really
online.
Lovely.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's a Van Gogh print.
Yes,
it's like
that's what it looks like.
Yeah, so it's I get compliments on it all the time.
Every week. Senator Gillibrand said the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like Van Gogh, yes.
Yeah,
wow.
It's great.
Oh, yes, it's lovely.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I like your background, too. Did you make that paper in the background?
No, these are art quilts.
Oh, okay. Cool. Quilts. I thought for some reason I thought it was paper. They're beautiful.
Nope. Real quilting artists made these.
Oh my goodness.
Some of whom have contacted me saying, hey, that's my quilt, because I've gotten them at shows.
Really?
I get these, yes.
You go to quilting shows and like...
Well, I love quilts. I like anything artisanal, but I really like quilts. And especially for my DC apartment, because like, how the heck am I going to send all these paintings? So my house in Hawaii, I have a lot of paintings, but here I decided, because I always have to have art around me. And I decided to, buy quilts, which I really like.
Oh my gosh. I can see the stitching now behind you.
This one is fantastic. The stitching is like tiny, tiny stitching all over.
It's beautiful. Okay, let's get started. I don't want to take too much of your time. Today, we are welcoming back a returning hysteria favorite. She's a woman of many talents, the junior senator from Hawaii, a member of the Judiciary Committee. She makes her own paper, and now she's an author. Her new memoir, Heart of Fire, An Immigrant Daughter's Story, is available now. Welcome, Senator Mazie Hirono.
Hello.
It's really great to have you. I think you're the elected official who has been on the show the most.
I feel honored. Thank you. I love talking to you all.
Oh, likewise. So you've had a few recent victories. First of all, you and Senator Duckworth successfully advocated for the Biden administration to appoint an AAPI representative to a senior level position. Second, your anti-hate crime bill passed the Senate almost unanimously. Congratulations on both of those things.
Yes. Yes. As I said at one point, miracles do happen. But nonetheless, when the need is there, even the Republicans can come forward and vote for a bill.
Right. Well, the passage of the bill marked a moment of bipartisanship in the Senate, which is weird in a time when bipartisanship has almost become an impossible dream. Mm-hmm. What do you think, or why do you think the Senate came together on this issue?
Well, everyone knew that there's been a dramatic increase in hate crimes targeting Asian American Pacific Islanders. And we just saw all the images on the news of people being beaten up and other people standing by doing nothing. These are horrific images. And so Chuck Schumer wanted to bring my bill, COVID-19 hate crimes bill, to the floor in a fast track. And so as the bill was being readied for debate and discussion on the floor, different people began to think about it. And I worked closely with Susan Collins, who had some concerns. And I addressed her concerns. And we were able to broaden the support for the bill while retaining the purpose. But certain Republicans filed some 20 amendments to do in the bill, basically to undo the bill and all of that. And we negotiated down to 3 amendments. And all of the amendments were defeated. Even the people who submitted the amendments ended up, i.e. Ted Cruz, ended up voting for the bill. And there was only one no vote against it. And we won't talk about him very much.
Okay.
The no
well,
vote,
I was going to ask, what is a person who votes against a hate crime bill? What is their problem? Like, what do you think was going on there?
I don't spend a lot of time trying to figure it out, but I think he he wants to be the notorious, or I don't know, notoriety. But what I've said is that, you know what, he obviously doesn't stand with the AAPI community at a time when we all should be standing up to these kinds of totally unprovoked, vicious attacks on a group of people. Mm-hmm.
Senator, as Aaron just said, aside from your bill and Senator Gillibrand's Military Justice Improvement Act, there is really no meaningful bipartisanship in the Senate. And also, very notably, disagreements on important issues within our own party, which we're seeing play out with the infrastructure bill. What components of the current version of the bill do you think are absolutely vital to American families?
In terms of the infrastructure bill? But Joe Biden wouldn't have proposed the infrastructure bill as well as the American family bill without understanding that these are necessary bills. We all know that there are trillions of dollars in infrastructure throughout our country that have gone unmet. Every state has the bridges and, you know, things that are falling down. And so it's been an ongoing issue. Even Trump wanted to address infrastructure in the bizarre way that he usually does things. So nothing happened there. And then as for the family, American family plan, issues such as the family paid family leave, childcare, these have been also issues that we've been debating for years, and the need has been shown for years. And so now, as Joe Biden tries, and the rest of us, the Democrats, try to get the economy back on track and enable women in particular to get back to work, these are really important parts of the proposals and the plan to get our economy back on track and get back to some level of economic and social normalcy. So I'm not going to sit here and parse out those parts of the bill that should that we have to, you know, we're going to excise. We're still at the point where we would like all of that to happen. And even parts of it, I'm not hearing the Republicans talk about any significant infrastructure measure. They came up with something like a $600 billion plan as opposed to almost $3 trillion plan. The gap is very wide. And so I'm not quite sure how we're going to be able to accomplish this in a bipartisan way. And so we're going to, I would say, need to look at other processes to get this done. There may be some room for some negotiations, such as how we're going to pay for all this infrastructure, and the tax rate is an area, tax rates for corporations, so that they actually pay their fair share of taxes. That may be an area where we can have some negotiations. But I would say that the vast majority of the proposals in the infrastructure plan, as well as the American family plan, there's a huge gulf between where the Democrats are and where the Republicans are. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Democrats, there's not total unity across the entire caucus of Democrats. Mm-hmm. The White House is said to be hosting Senator Sinema to discuss the American Jobs Act this week. Intellectually, we know that Democrats need both Sinema and Senator Joe Manchin in the caucus for Schumer to retain majority leader and be able to get things done. But how are we supposed to not be thrown into spirals of anxiety over the fact that members of the Democratic Party might derail so much of the president's agenda before the midterms? Do you think Biden can figure out a way to get Sinema and Manchin to join the rest of the caucus?
I hope so. That's all I can say at the moment. Because let's face it, with a 50-50 split Senate, any Democratic senator can throw a wrench into the works. And so my hope is that Joe and Kirsten realize that the people in our country need help, families need help, small businesses, and that while there may be some areas for compromising, that the bottom line is that we ought to be together doing this. So let us hope that Joe Biden can work his magic.
An infrastructure of childcare in this country is a life-changing proposal that can affect the trajectory of generations of families, particularly women and their ability to work outside of the home. Mm-hmm. In your memoir, Heart of Fire, you discuss your experience being raised by a single immigrant mother in the United States. How has that experience informed your fight for the women, families, and immigrants in Congress?
when we first arrived from Japan, and my mother as a single parent working several jobs just to roof over our head, food on the table, we didn't even know about such things as a safety net, by the way. And so I don't think anybody talked to us that you can, you know, maybe there's some help out there. We just struggled. And therefore, I know the importance of these kinds of programs that will enable a person to, you know, generally it's a woman, to go out and work. And in my own family, because we certainly couldn't afford childcare. In fact, the thought didn't even enter my mother's head. That is why we had to leave. She had to leave her baby, my younger brother, in Japan, because there would be nobody to take care of him while she went to work here. And that separation trauma affected his life for the rest of his tragically short life. And so these kinds of support for women and for families is critical. And I understand that from my own lived experience.
Mm-hmm. So, Senator, we call you Zero Fucks Hirono around here because we admire how you speak your mind and tell it like it is. But it's never executed in a dramatic way. And it never really seems like you're seeking attention. You're just telling us what you think. It's always matter of fact.
Yes.
Have you always been like that?
It's been a journey for me because, as I expressed in my book, I come from a culture, both from my Hawaii culture as well as my Japanese culture, that being confrontational, being vocal, being aggressive are not traits that are particularly rewarded. And so in my political life, I basically got things done using other methods and being very strategic. I would use my voice once in a while, but never to the extent that I did during the Trump years, because I also can't stand bullies, and it is important to stand up to bullies. And so my journey has been to enable me to be my more complete self, because now I use my brain, my heart, and my voice.
Hmm. That's aspirational. And speaking of zero fucks, the House GOP just kicked Liz Cheney out of leadership for having the audacity to tell the truth about who won the election. Before the election, then-candidate Joe Biden said the fever would break, but it looks kind of like the plague is spreading. What do you make of the House GOP's formal break with reality?
I think that their adherence to this person who's not even the president, their fear of him is palpable. And apparently for them, bowing to Trump is more important than telling the truth. And they haven't been telling the truth in a long, long time. And every once in a while, maybe Kevin McCarthy, right after January 6th, on January 6th, he might criticize the president. But then they go right back into their Heidi Hills. But it's really pathetic to watch them. And I think the Republican Party in my view, they are going down a very bad path. And I don't know where they're going to end up, because they stand for nothing besides having to kiss Trump's ring. It's simply amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm really glad that Liz Cheney is sticking to her words and standing up to them as well as Trump. I hope that at some point it'll be like the McCarthy period, where somehow decency will once again prevail. But, you know, I've seen, sadly, very little of it from the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm. Well, Senator Hirono, congratulations on your recent successes. Congratulations on the book. Thank you so much for joining us once again.
Thank you.
And come back anytime.
Mahalo.
Thank you for the invitation. Mahalo. Aloha, everybody. Mm-hmm. As I always say, I always end by saying, everyone stay safe, be kind.
Oh, that's great.
Take care, everybody.
Yep, take care. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by IQBar. Power up your life with superior brain and body nutrition products from IQBar. Their plant protein bars are the perfect low-carb breakfast. Their IQ Mix Zero Sugar Hydration Drinks replenish electrolytes. And their IQ Joe Mushroom Coffees will keep you focused all day long.
Start each day right with IQ Bars, brain and body boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. Their ultimate sampler pack includes all three. IQ Bar empowers doers with superior brain and body nutrition. All their products are entirely free from gluten, dairy, soy, GMOs, and artificial sweeteners. And today, Hysteria listeners get an exclusive offer of 20% off plus free shipping. Just text Hysteria to 64,000.
One thing I love about IQ Bar is, first of all, right now it's really dry where I am.
Oh, okay.
It is hard for me to stay hydrated. I'll just be going through my day and I'll be like, why am I so like—
Parched.
I'm parched. I'm in a bad mood. I feel like I'm going to pass out. And it's, you got to drink some water. You got to stay hydrated. I really like their IQ Mix Zero Sugar hydration drinks because it allows me to rehydrate myself at a time when I feel like the atmosphere is trying to take all my moisture away.
Well, and sometimes you need more than just water.
Sometimes you need more than just water. I also love IQ bars because I love a portable breakfast.
I love a grab-and-go breakfast. No dishes.
Love something I can walk around holding and eating. I like something I can eat in my car without endangering the lives of me and every other motorist on the road. A breakfast burrito. not the safest thing to eat behind the wheel. IQ bar, go ahead and do it. Good for you. Great ingredients. Helps you stay focused and alert throughout the day. And and you don't have to dirty any dishes. Refuel smarter with IQ Bar's Ultimate Sampler Pack. That's 7 IQ Bars, 4 IQ Mix Sticks, and 4 IQ Joe Sticks.
And now our special podcast listeners get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus get free shipping. To get your 20% off, just text Hysteria to 64,000. Get your discount, text Hysteria to 64,000. That's Hysteria to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
And welcome back. Alyssa and I are now joined by two wonderful women for a conversation about drama. Alyssa, do you like drama?
Kind of love it. As long as it's not about me.
Right, right. I like drama too. I think like blind gossip, that celebrity, this is my most shameful joy, is blind gossip, that website that just like amalgamates all of the like celebrity gossip that doesn't have names attached to it. I'm obsessed with that website. I'm obsessed with, but I know I shouldn't. I know it's dirty and bad. I'm going to bring in the other two women who are joining us for the conversation. First up, she is a comedian, writer, director. I would call you a creator, but I feel like that word's been colonized by professional influencers who don't actually make anything. So she's a creator, but like a real one. Kieran Deal.
A meme is a thing, Ryan. A meme is a thing.
Well, a meme is like, I guess like it's like a collage. It's like a digital collage, sort of, but less so.
A digital collage. And that's what you make. Or you make pictures of yourself, like sitting in front of, you know, nice furniture and looking really pretty. It's a thing. It's a thing. It's so great to be here. That's what I meant to say.
I feel like you would make a hilariously bad influencer. And I feel like you could actually like create a character that was like, I'm an influencer who just like spills the beans about what the world is all the time.
And a lot of yelling, a very ranty influencer.
Next, she is basically an honorary co-host at this point. You know her, you love her. It's Crooked Media's Priyanka Arabindi.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Priyanka, where are you right now?
I am in my grandma's guest bedroom, to be very specific. I'm in New Jersey for the week. Now that I'm vaxxed, I feel good to travel. So I have a very, you can't see, but like a little lilac-y background.
Did you take a plane?
I took a plane to New York. I was in New York for a couple weeks, and then here is close. So I just was like, oh, great. I'll spend a week with you.
Was it weird to be on a plane?
It was weird to me specifically because it wouldn't have been so weird had the guy next to me not been like super chatty. And I was like, this is That was not really the best way to be normally. Like, why are we doing this now?
With his mask on?
Yes. Oh. And I'm like sitting there like, no, it was a whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I thought that was the death of that.
Yeah. But, you know, it could have been that the pandemic maybe made us all so desperate for face-to-face human interaction that now we're all going to be chatty.
No. That's unlikely.
I could see the first part. I don't really know about part number two. I really like plain time, actually. I realized I missed it because it's like, I don't know. I'm like, I guess you can get your shitty Wi-Fi there, but I'm like, this is uninterrupted time to just read a book. Like, when else do you get 5 hours, no phone, no internet, no nothing, to just like read a book?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes at my house, I play Airplane by just putting my phone in another room on a day I'm feeling very lazy.
What a life. I need to learn how to do that.
Any day could be an airplane day if you just remove your telephone and computer from the space.
Yeah, yes. Serve yourself like 2 glasses of water for 5 hours and like a little serving of peanuts and boom.
Right. Fall asleep in a way that really hurts your neck for several days. That's another way to play Airplane, less fun. Okay. So I wanted to talk today about drama because I've been thinking about drama because it's been in the news, because it's always in the news, because drama is interesting. But specifically, we've been talking in the news about Bill and Melinda Gates getting a divorce, and everybody's kind of having opinions about that. There's also been the Ben Affleck, Jennifer Lopez reunion, because everything from the year 2002 has come back.
That's funny.
Ben already looks way better.
Refreshed.
Does she have like an aura around her she that must. Just projects excellence on everybody?
Or Botox.
Yeah, it's true. And then the third piece of drama is like a sad piece, and I almost feel like bad bringing it up. But John Mulaney's getting a divorce, and I was very sad when I read that piece of information. And I was like, why am I so sad? I've never met John Mulaney, either of the Gateses, or J-Lo or Ben Affleck. Never met any of them. But I was like, why do Ben and J-Lo feel like non-real enough to me that I can like crack jokes about their relationship? Why do Bill and Melinda feel non-real enough to me that I can crack jokes about their relationship? But John Mulaney and his wife, Anna, why does that feel like, oh, this is so terrible? So I was like, yeah, this is something. This is something we can talk about. Priyanka, since you are the guest, even though you're basically a squad member at this point, do you like drama? Like other people's drama? Do you like to be the center of drama? What's the role of drama in your life?
Yeah. So I feel like I don't have very much drama in my personal life and like never really have been one to have a ton. So I don't know what that experience is really like.
Boo.
No, I don't. I also was thinking though, like it's more like the way you handle a conflict, not necessarily like having, everyone has them, but like it seems to me that like drama arises from like going and talking to everybody about it or like specific things that you then do, which I also then was like, I feel like is separate in a way from what we're talking about. These public people who kind of like, we feel that we know them in some way or that we can like be invested or that we can just like comment on. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's weird that we pursue it so much in entertainment, but I also think that we kind of feel entitled to it in a way and I don't really know why.
Mm-hmm. Well, Karen, you're somebody who has like written stories that have like contained drama. And I was having a conversation with Josh the other day and he brought up this really interesting point and I would love to hear your thoughts. He said something about how it's like hard to write a love story because functional love doesn't have a lot of drama in it. Like if a relationship is functional, it shouldn't be dramatic. But if a story is interesting, it should be dramatic. Like, do you think that there is like a tension between the way that we've seen love depicted in fiction and the way that we expect love to play out or relationships to play out in our lives?
100% I think that. Yes, of course I think that. Ryan, there are how many separate shows with, I'm like just screaming at you now.
It's like, there are a screaming influencer.
coming in super hot to an incredibly reasonable question because guys, this is about drama. It's like, but Bridgerton, think about Bridgerton and then Grey's Anatomy and then How to Get Away with Murder. Like everything has a love triangle. Everything has like, you know, a guy that you could wash your clothing on his abs. You know what I mean? And then like people are licking each other and there's all this eye fucking. Yes, of course you need drama. Otherwise, everything's boring. Why do I want to watch somebody be like, oh, like, can you please take off your socks before you go to bed? Like, that's not interesting. You want escape. We're all looking for an escape, and in entertainment specifically, we want to be entertained. That's one of the best parts of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Has there ever been a piece of fiction that you think like specifically fucked up your concept of what a functional relationship should be? Like, is there a couple that you saw like that either was a celebrity couple or like something that you were not personally attached to that you were like, that's love. And then as you got older, you're like, wait a minute, why am I trying to live this out?
Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. And I was like, something's not right here. I think the happily ever after, everything has the happily ever after to it, right? Like if you think about like Sex and the City or whatever, like it ends when there's like this happily ever after. And really, actually, isn't that just a beginning? That's a beginning.
Mm-hmm. Alyssa, do you like drama?
Okay. Do I like drama? So one, yes, in my personal life, definitely not, because drama equals anxiety, which equals IBS triggers for me.
Right on.
So I like drama, but like it's so funny because when you brought up this topic 2 weeks ago, I started watching Mayor of Easttown. And love I that. Was so fucked up after because, like, think about it. Like, you guys, on a day-to-day basis for 4 years, seeking it or not seeking it, Donald Trump brought severe drama into our lives every single day. And, like, since he left, glad he's gone. Don't get me wrong. I'm kind of like, what's up? What's going on? And, like, the drama on Twitter is so fucking boring. So I start watching Mayor of Easttown, and then I was like, it's like I need another hit. So I started rewatching Succession. Because I couldn't get enough. I'm like, I need backbiting. I need drama. I need to know. Guess what? I know what Logan – I know what happens in the season two finale. I don't care. Because in season one, I'm like, what is Logan Roy gonna do? And that is – to me, it's like it's a little bit of an adrenaline. It's up. It's down. It's – you know, I love it. It's so fun. It's like I miss soap operas, you know?
Do you think that like people's love of drama or gravitating toward drama is why more people watched Donald Trump's speeches than watched Joe Biden's speeches?
I think that it was a modicum of drama, but also, I mean, Donald Trump was tweeting things like, I'm going to bomb North Korea. So it was really also like a safety thing, like what's going to happen to us? Are we in danger? You know, what is he undoing? I mean, he literally undid – people like to say he undid things by fiat. It's like, no, he undid them by tweet. And so I think that that was definitely something. And also, I mean, having worked in the White House, I know that nobody really watched Barack – I mean, no one's watched a former president the way that they ever watched Donald Trump. So we really are back to normal-ish, which is great. But it's also now, like, kind of need a fix. If it comes in the form of Logan Roy, so be it.
Yeah, it's sort of like Donald Trump was like, it sort of feels like we were kind of all stuck in this big like stadium. And then Donald Trump comes into the stadium and he's like carrying this giant bomb and the fuse is lit. And he's just like, so we're all just like, we better watch that guy that's got the bomb. Nobody's stopping him. And now he's like outside of the stadium kind of lumbering around and we're still watching him because he's still got the bomb even though he's like less dangerous. But yeah, it definitely feels like, I definitely feel like more bored by politics now, but it's almost a relief.
But isn't also drama, like part of drama is that there's someone in the equation that you're rooting for. Right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of like the element of the drama. It's like, is the good person or the person that you like going to be the winner or the whatever?
It's not fun drama if there's not someone you're rooting for. Otherwise, it's just like, this is complicated and bad.
Exactly. It's like my first real memory of drama was when Brad and Jen just announced they were going to get divorced. And I was like, this can't be happening. And of course, at that point, you're kind of rooting for both of them. And then you found out about Angelina. And that is when I got online and got my Team Aniston shirt from Kitson and was like, this is fucked up. And it was, and that was when the real drama began, because when they separated amicably, there wasn't really drama. It's like Bill and Melinda. I give no fucks. Guess what? They are both rich. I'm not really rooting for either one of them. They're going to be fine.
Yeah, totally. Priyanka, what was your first memory of like a drama involving people that have nothing to do with you, but that you nevertheless felt very invested
in? It's really funny because it was the same thing. We talked about this topic, or we were mentioning this topic, and I was like, yeah, Brad and Jen, Angelina, then when Brad Pitt, I have a very distinct memory of when Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie then decided to separate, or whatever the first news break was. It was, I was in a newsroom and people like stood up, we changed the TV. People were like, are they gonna, I think Obama was on TV. They were like, are they gonna kick him off for this? It was like, are you crazy? No, they're not. But like, this is insane.
Do you remember the W Magazine cover with Angelina and Brad?
Yes. I was Oh my God, yes.
Are you kidding me? You did not just do that when Mr. and Mrs. Smith came out.
Guys, yep.
This was in 2004 and I remember it clear as day.
The detachment. I think there's something about the like, you need enough distance. You need enough distance for the drama to be fun. Trump drama wasn't fun because it was like, oh, what happens with this policy? Oh, is my family going to be able to travel on the airplane? Like that to me wasn't so fun. But with Brad and Jen, you're like, well, it's perfect anyway. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, how does perfection get ruined? Like, it's like this, it's getting to be like a little peeping Tom.
Mm-hmm. What was the first time that you found yourself like emotionally reacting to a kind of Brad and Jen type situation?
I can't remember the first Brad and Jen type situation, but I remember like the first boy girl party that I went to, like as a salacious drama, guys, as like whatever, but like it was like a boy girl pool party. And people were like, oh, should we play spin the bottle? Oh, should we get in the closet? And like very innocent, like, oh, 7 minutes in heaven. But children, we were children, do you understand? And mm-hmm. I had all these great suggestions because I had read a lot of Judy Blume.
Yeah, I looked forward to like opportunities for drama to happen in my life when I was a child. Like I
totally
couldn't wait. Like the boy girl parties. I didn't go to that many, but the ones I went to was like for weeks, I'd like lay out my outfit, be like, okay, is the boy I like going to be there? What about the girl I don't like? What's going to go on with that?
Who's
like
going to slow dance. Yep.
Yeah, totally. And like, I look back on my like journals from when I was a kid and I wish I could say I was making these really precocious observations about the nature of existence, but I wasn't. I was cataloging... I was cataloging interactions that I had that were very mundane with the various boys that I liked. That was it. My childhood journal did not pass the Bechdel test. Like, it's embarrassing. But,
wait,
like,
do you have an excerpt for us now? Because is there an excerpt available?
No, they're still at my parents' house, and I don't want to be in the same room with them. I'm so embarrassed by how, like, addicted to boy-related drama I was when I was a kid. Alyssa, were you like that, or did you like escape child drama addiction?
No, definitely not, because I'm the person everybody wanted to tell their secrets to.
Ooh.
And so it was always, it would be like, well, it's like, it's, well, you know, so-and-so wants to be at the dance tonight with so-and-so, and they would tell me, but then someone else would tell me that they wanted to dance with so-and-so, and then I try to be like a little power broker out there on the dance floor, be like, do you want to dance with Debbie? And then you'd be like, you put yourself in the friend zone real fast, though, when you play this, like, you know, I'm just going to broker all the dancing on the dance floor. But no, it was there was always drama. And then there's the time that, like, your best friend likes someone, but then the guy likes you, but you kind of like him. And what are you going to do?
Disaster.
No, I loved it. I loved it. It was great. I mean, I hated it kind of, but I loved it.
It's really so similar. It had to be, that sounds like a really good, like, it like almost a direct runway to your time in the White House. It's just like brokering deals.
It's a funny thing because the White House is actually so dramatic, right? Like there was no more satisfying 360 experience than working in the White House. And it's not like, I don't mean it's drama like between staff people, but I mean, essentially the whole job is being in conflict about something.
The White House, a drama lover's paradise.
Totally. He's like, oh my God, what's next? And then we started watching Scandal and we were like, this is too much. This is beyond. This is too much.
I was thinking about how stand-up, it's like what's exciting about it or what's really fun about it is that you can take something and what you wouldn't say in real life or how angry you would get or how mean you might get or your real thinking. If you do that in real life, you're a monster. You're a monster, right? Mm-hmm. But if you put it on stage, it becomes, you're making it more dramatic. You're making a story more dramatic. You're making it funnier by like heightening it and escalating it. And that's kind of the fun of it. And you take back the story and make it yours and you can shift the point of view. But it's also like you get to make it bigger than it is, right? And that is drama. And that's what I guess a lot of comedians went into professionally. So it's, we're really just low budget joke slingers versus like Alyssa's like drama in the White House, which honestly is a much more impressive way to spend your time.
So I want to talk a little bit about like drama can be really exhausting. Like working in the White House with that much drama and having to be like the wrangler of it sounds very emotionally draining. Do you all have memories of working with somebody or having to, you know, share a space with somebody, maybe like a roommate or whatever, who is particularly dramatic? Like Priyanka, who's the most dramatic person that you've been forced to spend lots of time with? And like, how did that go? And if you can't think of somebody, it's been you.
Oh, I've got
there. No, I have a couple. I have a couple thoughts. I don't want to like air their specific names. But I also think that like so much of what perpetuates like drama rather than just like having a normal conflict is like the running around and talking to so many people about it and like the way you handle things. And I think I probably wasn't the best in, I'm thinking of certain situations like this, and I definitely was like talking to people about it and like making it, not attempting to make it a whole thing consciously, but like in ways, yes, doing that. And I think, I don't know, something I also think about with like when we think about drama and celebrity relationships or like drama with like real people and not like, you know, fictional things. You kind of realize at some point like how shitty it feels like in your own life when you're going through that. Like as Alyssa was saying, like drama in your own life is anxiety. Like you're sitting in your bed. For me, it's like replaying conversations and like how I should have responded or whatever. It's like really like a shitty, terrible feeling. And then, I don't know, I think that gives you a little bit more empathy or like a little more, in some cases, watching public people go through things like almost, you know, like breakups and things like that, where you're like, maybe I will leave you alone. And some it's just like, cause you're uninteresting to me. Like Bill and Melinda, I also, I'm like, I don't
see. Right. Cause Priyanka, I don't think that Bill or Melinda are listening to like Sarah McLachlan in their bedroom with the shades down. So I don't have empathy.
Right. I just, well, also like I will say that's not interesting to me. So I'm like, okay, that's fine. But like some of them are like more inherently interesting, but it's like, okay, I also do get how that is shitty and bad. Maybe I've never experienced the same thing as you, but I think like going through a little bit of drama in your own life kind of can give you a perspective that makes it a little less like delicious, quote unquote, for real people. Delicious, like drama can be delicious in fictional situations. I will say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, being the center of drama probably like sucks. I don't think I've really been the center of very much drama because I prefer to like observe it rather than be in the middle of it. But I feel like there are people who crave it and people who really try
totally to
like be the ones that are like the talked about people. And I don't understand.
I don't know if they know that they do that consciously.
The Kardashians know.
I think some people do it for calculated, like in a calculated way, but I'm thinking of like people in personal interactions who, and like even like friends of mine, I don't think they're like consciously aware that like that's sort of that they're getting themselves into these types of situations all the time or like that it's a recurring thing, but it's kind of like, that doesn't have to be. It's not just like, woe is you, like this stuff kind of happens to you. It's you play a part in perpetuating drama. And I also wanted to side note on this earlier. You mentioned the Bechdel test earlier. I was really thinking about how the word drama and like the kind of like connotations and associations we have around them are very like, at least in my mind, I don't know if you guys feel this way, are very like, it's like catty girls or women. And it's like, Men have conflicts too. I don't know if we would call that drama, but like they do.
Let's so normalize.
Petty. So petty as a gender.
It shouldn't be. Yeah. Like it's not gender specific, like who is having these types of conflicts, but what we call them and the way we refer to them.
Right.
I really feel like it's like women's conflicts are drama.
Over the last few years, I've made it like a personal self-improvement mission to broaden my perception of what is dramatic. And my scientific conclusion from this project has been that men are extremely fucking dramatic. Have you ever watched a international soccer game? Those guys are flopping around on the pitch, crying like babies, pretending to be injured. You watch a women's soccer match, they are not diving. Diving in international soccer is like exhibits A through Z of men being just as dramatic, if not more dramatic, than women. And all of the drama that happened in the Trump White House was, for the most part, male-driven. Like the people, I'm not complimenting the women that worked for President Trump because they're ghouls. But women in that administration had longer careers than the men because they were able to keep their shit together. Like Kellyanne Conway is a parasitic growth on American democracy, but that parasitic growth survived for the entire, like for longer than almost anybody else who was there at the beginning.
Ultimately undone by family drama.
Family drama. Yes.
Family drama. Right. Right. Like that was something that kind of left me a little bit conflicted because it was like, when you see somebody else's family drama, it's like, do I get to have an opinion even if I really fucking hate this person personally? Do I get to have an opinion on whether or not she's a good mom? And I felt very like icky judging, you know?
Well, I mean, like if you did form an opinion, it was because there were TikToks and video available that provided you some context in which to have an opinion.
Right. It all seemed very bad. And I felt really awful about it. But I mean, I think that Priyanka, your point about drama being like presented as a female trait is like really, really good. Because I think that we all have been around men who are very dramatic. Kieran, you work in showbiz. That's an industry full of dramatic people who are constantly being either pumped full of ego or had their, you know, rejected. Like, have you noticed a difference in the way that men and women, like, act out the drama over that, like, emotional roller coaster?
I've been very lucky that I think the folks who really want to mess with me are, like, it's almost like self-selecting. I think if folks are pretty, you know, I've been lucky to avoid a lot of toxic workplaces on like the bigger projects that I've worked on. But you hear about it. It's so prevalent in, you know, in entertainment. This is the other side of it. It's like I read an article like that's the one about Scott Rudin, you know, being like a monster to his assistants and like smashing the laptop and like all of that kind of stuff. And it's like, that's drama. That's somebody who, but it's also kind of like egomaniacal. It's real people. And it feels like nightmarish to me. You know, there's something like a darker side that feels nightmarish. Like, what is it? I'm curious what makes it, it's like Brangelina feels like fun and salacious in this way because it's like they're so removed from where we are. But when you hear about like real people going through a situation of like harassment or, you know, abuse in a workplace, it feels really icky and gross. You know, do you guys like, but both of those would technically qualify as drama.
No, definitely. But it's because in the first one, there's no real victim, right? In the second scenario, when you talk about Scott Rudin, there's a victim in that. And that's terrible. You know, that's bad. Like he's a bad person. And you're also like, you want to know how that other person is. That person can't, you know, they're the victim. And so I think that's the difference when I look for my drama.
I would go ahead. I would push back a little bit and say like, you know, I've been through heartbreak before, like most adult human beings. And I've also been through having like a shitty boss. And I can go ahead and say that heartbreak hurt more than the shitty boss. That's not saying that the people that Scott Rudin abused, that their feelings aren't valid or anything. I'm just saying that the feelings of like big, huge celebrities like Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston, their feelings are super valid. Like,
well, and definitely.
So like, you know, I recently listened to a 5-part podcast series on Princess Diana. And she was one of those people that I think was so famous and so wealthy and so beautiful and so far seemed so far removed that it seemed like everybody felt entitled to her. Like they felt entitled to knowing everything there was to know about her. They felt entitled to photos taken of her without her consent. And like they kind of treated her like she was a really expensive pet that everybody owned instead of a human person. And like it had really tragic like consequences that have echoed like through generations. And I just wonder, like, I'm not trying to shame anybody for like being salaciously interested in like celebrity drama, but even when I'm like, when I like look back on coverage of like Katie Holmes really cannily breaking up with Tom Cruise and being like, yeah, way to go, you know, like I don't know any of the actual human emotions that are behind that. I don't know anything that's like, so I can only enjoy it to a very finite point before I start to feel bad about myself because I'm like, oh yeah, these are people, you know, it's sort of. Yeah.
Or I get really like the interpersonal part of it gets really like when someone cheats on someone else or whatever and the commonplaceness of that. Cause like it always just like my mom teaches in a preschool, like she has these preschoolers, she has a preschool and it's like in that school, it's always like share, try to be good. And it's like really, it feels like it's the last vestige of a place where I hear about these values that are like, about being like a good American citizen other than like when somebody's trying to get elected. Like other than that, it feels like it just isn't, those don't seem to be practices that are in a lot of workplaces. And maybe that's just my own negative perspective and that's untrue. Do you know what I mean? But does that make sense? Like they're like the prevalence of people cheating on each other to me is, it's really like I find myself getting more curious about like, what is the thinking behind why someone makes those choices and decisions? And like, how do you get to that place? And like, what are the ways in which like understanding the psychology behind it gets more fascinating to me than the fun quick fix of like a, oh, they're getting divorced or, oh, this thing happened or that couple's really hot. Like to me, that's just like a very quick little like jolt of like dopamine. But then when you sit in it, it can get icky.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. It can indeed get icky. It can get very icky. Okay. I just wanted to ask you guys, if you're comfortable sharing, can you recall an incident where you acted dramatic in a situation where you were the drama and that you can look back on now and find it funny? Mm-hmm. Like, have you ever thrown a drink in someone's face? Have you ever gotten in a big fight in public? Like, have you ever had a moment where you're like, haha, I am victorious, like anything like that? Because I have one that I will tell and I will give you guys a chance to think about your story. And I'm going to preface this because I know some people I went to high school with listen to this show. Shout out to Erica and a couple others. So we had this thing at my high school called Winter Week, which was basically like homecoming, but for winter sports. Because where I grew up, we had like football, cross country, and volleyball were in the fall. And then in the winter, we had like basketball and wrestling and gymnastics. And we'd had this like thing called a pep fest, pep rally type thing where we would have silly games on the Friday of the week and then there would be like a dance later. And there was one particular winter week, I believe it was my junior year of high school, where there was a boy who was a year older than me that I had a crush on and I was mad at him. I don't really want to go into why I was mad at him, but I was mad at him. And there was a pie eating contest. And this boy and I both got called down to be participants in a pie eating contest. I was the junior class representative in this pie eating contest. He was senior class. And then the freshman and sophomore were, I think they were both siblings of friends of mine. So like, that's how small schools work. Everybody's like siblings. So, you know, we get down to the pie eating contest. I was mad to be sitting next to this dude. I start the pie eating contest. I look down at my pie. It's like just not a real pie. It's like pudding with whipped cream on top. And I was like, I don't want to eat this pie, but I am sitting next to this boy that I would like to slam a pie onto. And so rather than eating the pie, I picked my pie up and I slammed it into the back of his head, pushing his face deeply into his pie. And then that became a little bit of a pie fight. That was a moment where I was the center of drama, and I don't regret it. I didn't hurt him.
Aaron, you just sound like an icon to me, like a high school icon. This doesn't sound like
I know.
Drama.
This is a legend. Legend. She's yeah. a legend.
I didn't hurt him. I didn't like violently, but I just like picked my pie up and just poop in the back of his head. And then it ended up being like, it was funny, you know? It ended up, I think it was funny. I don't know. I haven't talked to the guy in years and years and years, but I'm sure he's doing great. Okay, so that's my dramatic story.
Ryan, you started a whole sport. That sounds like it could be a, like next to WWF and like, you know.
I do not advocate assault. I do not consider it assault because it was in the context of a pie eating contest. I would say don't do that outside of the context where people could just expect to have pie on them. But I don't know. I'm rationalizing. I probably did. It was probably bad. I think the statute of limitations has expired, I hope. Alyssa, do you want to go next?
Yeah. So this was maybe 2012. I don't really remember what year it was. But we were getting a new chief of staff in the White House, and all these reporters were writing stories about what it would mean for people. And someone talked to this reporter and characterized my job as much smaller than it was. And I was already a little amped up, you know what I mean? Like I was already on edge. And the press team sends out the article because it comes out talking about White House intrigue. And as I said, I don't like the drama when it's about me. And I read this article and my face just sets fire. I was like, who the fuck would say this about me? I have done nothing but fucking work for you people. I have not just done my job. I have done nice things for your families. I have gone above and beyond. And someone fucking knifed me like this, which I basically replied all to the whole email chain and said. And on my behalf, girlfriend Kathy Rumler, White House counsel, fucking doubles down, right? She's like, fucking amen, Alyssa. Like, that's not actually what she said, but that was the vibe. And she's, and like the two of us basically over email high-five each other. We're like, yeah, fuck them. How the fucking dare they? How dare they? So I come into the office the next day feeling good about myself. And I go into my office. I'm like, no one's ever going to fuck with me again. And I get a call that's like, hey, POTUS wants to see you. So I go down to the Oval and the president's like, hey, you. And I was like, hey. He's like, so I heard you sent an email. And I was like, what? And he's like, I heard you sent an email. And my face, and he's like, and so I start kind of looking out the window. He's like, stop trying to figure out who came to talk to me, which is exactly what I was doing. And he was just like, listen, you know, you need to understand that when you say things like that, people get upset. And I was like, get upset? What? Like, I was going to come in this morning and tell on them to you. And so they preempted by saying I acted like a lunatic last night. He's like, that's not the vein in which it was offered. And I was like, there is no other way, there's no other vein in which it could have been offered. And he's like, just stop, okay? It's a stupid press article. You're the first one to tell people to not take that shit seriously. And I was like, fine. I'm like, thank you for taking the time. And I go to walk out of the office and he's like, stop trying to figure out who it was. And of course, I couldn't let it go. I go to the meeting that morning and I was just like, so I talked to POTUS this morning just to see if someone looked down at the table to figure it out. And then I was like, Alyssa, stop it. And I was sitting across from Pfeiffer and he was just like shaking his head like, stop it. You've done enough. Stop it. But that was a time in which I was the drama. I didn't like how it felt. I never sent an email like that ever again.
You know, that's the most Machiavellian thing I've ever heard you do. Like being like, I just want them to be fearful. I just want them to live in fear.
Fuck you, motherfuckers. Just kidding. Two love iconic them all. Still friends with everybody.
Drama. Someone nice.
I do love this. I do love this idea of how many, like, just you had your own vocabulary. I went to see POTUS in the Oval. And I was like, I haven't heard a story like this. It's a POTUS in the Oval. And I was like trying to keep up just with the terminology. So exciting.
Oh, thank you, Kieran. Thank you.
Like, Alyssa, I feel like, though, with your workplace drama or, like, taking it elsewhere, it just, like, as Kieran is saying, like, this is the most delicious drama, like, I have come into contact with in such a long time.
Because it didn't happen to you. But you can enjoy it because I'm clearly fine.
Right. No, but I mean, like, you're just in a situation that it's, like, everyone cares about. So, of course, like, you can, like, perpetuate your drama or, like, take it elsewhere because people are inherently interested in it. I feel like for most people, it's, like, this isn't actually that interesting to me. Why do I care? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. You just have the world's most interesting drama.
Thank you. Priyanka,
have you ever been at the center of, have you ever been the drama cause?
Ryan, it's a little mean to make either of us go now that we've heard POTUS drama. Like, and also, like,
put it in different context. Put it into humiliated in front of POTUS. Okay. You can do better.
No. The POTUS thing is so great though, because it is funny that he's like, remember, you're a good person. You're a person who doesn't care about this shit. And it's like everything in his language is like, you know who you are. And you're like, no, but I'm angry. And he's like, no, you're chill. You're a chill person. You're chill and cool. Remember? And then you're like, well, okay, I guess I am. Like,
okay, Priyanka, I'm not letting you off the hook.
No, I mean, I don't have any very good stories. I think I can maybe tell you a few about, like, when I was talking shit about somebody and it, like, got back to them. And, like, that's great. Brutal. But, like, no, I think for most every part of my life, I don't consider myself, like, cool enough to, like, have been in the center of drama that people care about. Like, not even at this point now where it's like I'm on the internet, like, no one really cares. Like, I'm not, like, enough of a fish at all to, like, that anyone, like, really cares what I do, which is fine. I'm okay with that. I don't really need to be in this. I think it's better that way. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, from middle school, high school, it's like anything. Like, I was on the sideline of, like, drama, like, affiliated with people who were in it, but, like, really not.
Oh, so that's the ideal spot.
Yeah. Also, yeah. Bystander.
Yeah.
Also, that little, like, very, like, I never really cause any drama. If we were making a movie about a super spy, that's exactly the monologue that it would open with this monologue, and we would be cutting it. We would be cutting ironically. We would have a VO of you being like, I've just never really been involved in stuff. And then we would cut to footage of you, like Jason Bourne style, like, beating a guy up with a magazine or something like that.
Okay. I will say, no.
I suspect you, Priyanka. Suspect.
There have been a number of times in this conversation alone, Priyanka, that you've just been like, I mean, when you talk to other people about stuff, when you know, it's like sometimes it's like you're venting to other people and you've just kind of circled that. You've circled that several times and it's made me very, very suspicious curious.
The only drama I feel like I've really been a part of is like the kind where it's like people kind of like cattily, like talking in their own circles or like talking to the same people about each other. Like, that is kind of the extent of the drama. I've never had like a dramatic confrontation in like the way that like a pie or being confronted by POTUS. I just feel like my drama is a little too small scale for this conversation. It's not that I'm not a perfect angel. I certainly have done things that I'm like, yeah, that was dramatic. And I regret like going to run my mouth in that way. But like, all of it has been very small scale, I will say.
Well, you're way more well-adjusted than I was when I was in my 20s.
No, I just wasn't cool enough to, like, have drama. I am not cool enough to have important drama.
Trust me, as someone who's gotten pulled over by a police officer while sobbing along the Indiana toll road, I'm going to go ahead and say not being dramatic is the way to go.
No, I'm dramatic, but, like, not, like, the drama in the way that we're talking about. Like, I've certainly – we did a whole episode about crying. You know that. You guys know that. I'm like, yeah, please.
Oh, no, I was crying about a boy. Like, there was relationship drama that led me to – there was this whole chain of events, and I was speeding, but my odometer broke, and the cop pulled me over, and I was sobbing, and it was this whole thing. Kieran – What's your center of drama story?
I can be pretty, like, I'm not afraid of, I mean, when somebody really hurts me who's, like, very, very close to me, like, in a relationship or whatever, I do find that interpersonal conflict, like, very, very stressful. You know, if somebody's very, very close. But I think I have been told that it's, like, But if somebody, if it's been inappropriate or whatever, I'll say, I will like address the situation. And there's been a lot of times that that's just blown up in my face. That's been, that's really blown up in my face. But maybe the best example, this is like such a nerdy example. This is very nerdy. And I never found this. I'll tell you the story. And if we don't want to keep it, we don't have to keep it. Because Caroline says so. That's our producer. So this is a pretty nerdy story. When I was in high school, me and one of my, I would say one of my best friends since middle school, we were like neck and neck for position like one and two for the valedictorian and the salutatorian, which is why I'm saying this is a very nerdy story. And she had taken one more class, whatever. And so at the end, and I remember being like, look, we're all going to go to a good college. Everyone's like doing the thing. It's fine.
And I love that you still know all the details of this drama. That's my side note.
Because, no, you don't understand, Priyanka, this like became, like it made the paper. Like it
what?
Was like
keep
this,
going,
this,
keep going.
Yeah,
what?
This story made like the fucking local news was calling me about this shit. So the principal calls us both into the office, lovely man. And he was like, yo, you guys are like so neck and neck. It's so, 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 so close. That like I thought maybe you guys could be like co-valedictorians. You could be valedictorians together and your friends and whatever. And I was like, yeah, tight, great. Sounds great, you know, cool, great. And then we found out who was ahead. And she was ahead by a little bit, you know, just by a little bit, whatever. Right. And I remember thinking it was curious because I was like, oh, that's interesting, because it was the other way around. Right. And this is like, again, the thing here is that this is a friend since middle school, 6 years we're talking, seven, I guess. Yeah, the whole of middle school. And it turned out she was a little bit ahead, which is fine. But when we left the office, right, it was like we were talking to one another and I was like, oh, like, what do you think happened? And then she told me that at the beginning of the school year, she had like enrolled with her mom in a bunch of like university classes and then like not told me about it, like had just basically taken a bunch of other classes secretly, which is so insane to me. Like it's so insane on the level of like, it's insane on the level that means that to me, what I learned from, I was like, so I've known you for 6 years and you're one of my closest friends and you looked me in the face every day at lunch and you lied to my fucking face. You lied to my face for a whole year. You looked in my face and you lied. What? So you could be, so that what? So for, to, you know, an eighth of a hundredth of a point so that you could be the valedictorian of like your high school? This doesn't matter. This doesn't, this is not, this is, if this is your biggest accomplishment, you fucked up, bitch. Do you know what I mean? Like you shouldn't even want this. This is so petty. It doesn't
matter.
What
perspective to have for an 18-year-old?
Yeah. It just doesn't matter. Like it's, and we were already into schools, whatever. And I remember I kind of looked her in the face. I nodded. And then I like walked away. I walked away and I never spoke to her again. And I guess that says something about me. I'm just like, I'm out, man. Oh yeah. And so hold on. So then the mom complains and she was like, my kids work so hard. She has to be the valedictorian. So she's the valedictorian. But then the whole school was like, Kieran's been wronged. Like this whole, like people knew we were friends, right?
There we go. This is good.
It made it to the local paper. Do you understand? Like, and then it was just, it,
but wait,
it just
Kieran,
really.
What did the local paper report?
That's a great question. They were like, what's your opinion on like what happened and whatever? And I was like, I don't want to talk to you. What? You're an adult. Get a job.
Yeah, like, full grown adult this? Asking me about my grades.
Wait. Yeah, are you asking me about? It's like what? But it's the central theme to me that makes that so dramatic. It's the personal betrayal. It was the friendship betrayal. It's the thing in Social Network. It's like the fact that it's your friend and somebody can like look you in the face and just be like, yo, but it's me. Like I gotta work on me. So then in the speech, in the speeches, we both gave speeches, right?
Okay. That was another question.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So in the speech, like, I put a line in and I thought it was, like, funny. I thought it was, like, funny and, like, ironic, like, yeah. Where I was just, like,
where's it going?
Yeah, I put – it was, like, a single line that I put in that was, like, you know, something about Liz, sometimes, you know, whatever. You know, your best friend of 6 years betrays you during a thing. You know what I mean? Like, I maybe put, like, just, like, but it's a simple sentence. And people, like – people loved that. They were like, damn, you got some balls on you. You know what I mean? To say this. And I was like, I don't know why simply stating the truth has become dramatic. I understand why, but I think it's because people are so conflict averse, they won't say shit.
No, Kieran, at your high school graduation, you took aim and shot the valedictorian in the face. So
no, it was like it, you have to understand. It was in like paragraph three as like a single example.
Shut up! Like your story kicked my story's ass. That story is gold. You should write
an amazing story. Listening to your story about personal betrayal, I think also like my maybe my definition of drama. Like I'm like, ooh, interpersonal conflicts and like what categorizes it as drama. I'd certainly have like feelings of personal betrayal, but like when does that become drama? Like when are you like, ooh, like. This is, I don't know.
When you have it out in the bathroom.
Yeah.
I argue a different point. I would say that drama is when there is a sense of an internal personal conflict that's like a high level of, you know, I would say probably betrayal is the biggest one.
Shit, never mind. I have a queen of drama over here.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I'm glad we got to the bottom of all of this.
Yeah,
we worked some things out here.
Queen of drama or drama queen. No, Priyanka, I look forward to your illustrious career in shit stirring. I can't wait to see what you do. You're a real rookie of the year over here. Okay, guys, we have to. This was a great conversation, very dramatic. Not really. This was just fun. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, Sanity Corner.
As a chef and a restaurant owner, I'm as meticulous about my cookware as I am about my ingredients. That's why I love Made In Cookware. Each pan they make isn't just designed to perform, it's crafted to last. As a mom, I love that I can trust Made In. It's made from the world's finest materials, so I can feel good about what I'm feeding my family. I'm Chef Brooke Williamson, and I use Made In Cookware.
And welcome back. We have reached almost the end of the show, but not quite. This week, we are going to take you through what is keeping us sane. It is our Sanity Corners. Alyssa, you have to run pretty soon, so I'm going to let you go first. What's keeping you sane lately?
So you guys, I don't know if you know this or not, but you can listen to Christmas music year-round on Sirius XM. And I have had a hard time sleeping. So I was like, first I was trying to watch shows, but shows keep me up, and I can't do podcasts because podcasts also sort of keep me up. Even everything going on in the world, BBC, global news podcast is too much for me. So I was like, what can I listen to? And I kept scrolling and I have like my favorite channels. And I was like, what is this Christmas tradition still alive? So anyway, I have been listening to The Little Drummer Boy, et cetera, at night. It is so soothing because you know what I never realized is like at Christmas time, Christmas carols at night kind of like remind you of the shit you have to do for Christmas. You know, it's like, oh shit, I should do this and this. And it's not that soothing. Now it is just Perry Cuomo and Bing Crosby and Nat King Cole, you name it. So anyway, that's what I've been doing. And it feels so good and I've been sleeping like a fucking rock.
Oh my gosh. So it's like attending somebody else's wedding as a date.
Yes.
Versus
you're like, this
throwing
is
your
lovely.
Own wedding. Yeah, you're like, ooh, this is just happening for me and I don't even have to do anything.
Nothing to be done except just feel like I'm in a warm blanket with a crackling fire and snowflakes.
Oh, it sounds great. Yeah. Although I would say if you say that too loudly around other people in northerly climates, they will be like, shut the fuck up. We earned this summer. It's coming.
To be clear, I'm saying this while wearing a turtleneck because it's a bit chilly today. So joke's on me.
Sometimes cold weather puts me in the mood for Christmas, even if it's just like not the right season. I'll be like,
yeah,
ooh,
it's toasty.
50 degrees. Yeah, gotta listen to some jingle bells. Alyssa, thank you so much for that Sanity Corner. That's a good one. I don't know if I'm going to I, you know what? I might buy into it because sometimes I can't sleep either.
So just try it. It's so fucking soothing.
Amazing. Okay, guys, I will go next. Per usual, my sanity corner is a book because I don't do anything anymore. I am reading a book. I love books that, especially during pandemic, books that have a feeling of like constant motion, constant movement. Last year, I read a book called Flights by a Polish author named Olga Tokarczuk, and that is an incredible book. She's one of my favorite writers, even though there's only like four of her books that have been translated to English. She's fantastic. I am currently reading a book called Great Circle by Maggie Shipstead, and it is about a woman who's an adventurer who, like, in the 1920s was, like, traveling around the world and having adventures, and a woman in the present day who has to play her in a movie. And, like, just the feeling after being kind of not really able to feel as though you had the ability to go places or, like, even dream about going places for the last year, it's really cool to be in, like, a headspace where it's like, now they're on a ship, and now she's, like, flying this place, and now she's doing this, and now she's doing this. And the author Maggie Shipstead did like a lot of research and traveled as she was writing the book. And I follow her on Instagram, and it was like really fun to see her do all this cool shit and be like, what is she up to? This is what she was up to. It's a really fun book. It's a really fun read. And I found it to be a really great way to feel unstuck during a time of a lot of feeling stuck. So Great Circle by Maggie Shipstead and Flights by Olga Tokarczuk are two real good books if you want to feel like you're leaving your house, if you're not leaving your house. Priyanka, do you want to go next?
Sure. So I recently read, after like wanting to read it for a really long time, I read Marianne Williamson's book, A Return to Love. And I think that there are like some aspects of Marianne Williamson and certainly in the book as well that like, not for everybody, it is about like, in a way, religion. It's not like specifically tied to one religion, but it kind of is like about, you know, God or the universe or like whatever kind of concept of that you have, like some kind of higher power. I liked reading it a lot. A lot of it was the crux of it was sort of about like the interconnectedness of people, which I think like in some ways we all know, but we definitely like become disconnected from. And there were little like pieces here and there. Not every single bit resonated with me, like maybe like varying amounts of things from zero to like all will resonate with, you know, varying amounts of people. It just kind of depends on the place you're in and who you are. I totally get that. But I don't know. I have found like a level of comfort and peace in some ways from, I don't know, reading that and ruminating on some of the ideas there. So do with that whatever you will or do nothing. I don't mind.
Man. Priyanka, you've been poisoned by the online. Because,
I really have.
Because like,
I'm
of course when you read.
I'm not important enough to ratio, but I like, just don't, please don't.
Right. No, but of course when you read a book that's about spirituality, that's written by somebody that has a little bit of a reputation of being like woo-woo white lady spirituality, like you feel like you need to qualify the fact that you connected with it and enjoyed it. But actually you don't. Like, read things about spirituality and feel free to connect or not connect with it, or at least be like, okay, now I know what this person's thought process is. At the very least. Like,
I think it also like it made me feel a little bit bad. I mean, in some ways, like, sure, would Marianne Williamson be like the greatest president? Like, I don't necessarily think so, but like, I think we were in many ways, and I use we like very broadly, not like we, the people in this podcast specifically, but like we were mean to Marianne and like mean in a way that we weren't mean to like other people, which I mean, I don't know. And reading this, it kind of is like, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't be like people. That, not necessarily to her, but like to people in general. Just, I feel nicer having read it.
You know, people like have spiritual needs, and there are people that exist in culture that try to reach those spiritual needs. And it's sort of like, I don't know, we can't really ridicule people for like trying, you know?
Totally.
I'm trying to think, who wrote Year of Magical Thinking? Oh, Joan Didion. Year of Magical Thinking by Joan Didion is one of the best books on grief I've ever read. I'm not like a huge Joan Didion fan. I know that's weird for like a white lady liberal living in California, but Year of Magical Thinking, I found to be great, and it's very much about like spirituality. It's about grief specifically, but I also thought Bell Hooks's On Love was a really good book about stuff that like a lot of times gets marginalized in big conversations. Like, so yeah, I mean, there's like a ton of stuff out there that's been like written about spirituality or written about like the invisible that, you know, you don't necessarily glom onto every single concept, but like, there's stuff in there for people that's helpful.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what's your sanity corner this week, Karen? What's keeping you sane?
That's a great question. I went off the rails a long time ago, so I thought this was an I feel petty week.
Feel petty if you want to. You can call an audible. That's fine. After
all these like nice things that we've offered, you can totally like do a petty one.
Yeah, do it.
So what, am I pivoting to an I feel petty?
Yeah, do it.
Do it.
I will allow it. You've been here for 3 years, Karen.
Thank you so much. Thank you. A bit of grace.
You've earned it.
Thank you. Wow. Look at that. I was going to say, I feel like I'm reemerging, or my, you know, people I know are reemerging now. Like Priyanka, you were saying like double vaxxed. And now there's like this question that you're finding where people are like, oh my God, how are you? And my answer is bad. I'm bad. You know? Bad. The answer is bad. Where were you? There was a global pandemic for 18 months that is ongoing. Okay. We've all been locked in our homes. Like, I kicked out my roommate on March 1st of 2020 because I wanted to host more dinner parties. It's like, it's been bad. It's been bad. But you don't want to walk around being like, so I don't know why people are asking. My thing would be like, number one, maybe don't ask. Start with a different sentence or phrase. Like, let's brainstorm together a different sentence or phrase that could be a conversation opener. But in the event that somebody is like, oh my God, how are you? And your answer, like mine, is bad, not great. It's bad. I feel like this is our Kanye West moment. I feel like this is your moment to be a celebrity. And you can just be like, I'm not taking any questions at this time. I'm so sorry, but no questions at this time. No photos, no questions. I'm so sorry. No questions, no photos. Your voice can drop an octave. Do you know what I mean? Let's just put like a, I'm so sorry. No, it's like a celebrity coming out of rehab. You know, I'm just not taking questions right now. Thank you so much.
Wait, what would you replace the question with? Like, let's say the first time you and I meet in real life, which we should anyway in the near future because we don't.
Which would be lovely. Yes.
We could go on a walk. We could sit there and wave at each other from down the sidewalk. But what should? Okay, we meet up. I don't say how are you. What should I say?
Kieran, those shoes look fantastic.
Great. Okay, that's,
you know. How about some sort of, you could make some sort of a comment on, like, just start from a different, just let's start from a different place, like anything. Start from what someone's wearing or the traffic is back in Los Angeles. That's something we can commiserate over, you mm-hmm. know. You could talk about the other people that you've seen, right? Like, oh, I've had an opportunity to see this person and this person, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe think about the global highlights of the thing, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. I think like,
yeah,
I think that I have like this kind of brain bank of demented icebreakers that I could maybe just pull out, like,
which
billionaire should we eat first?
If you were
to be a ghost, you could haunt, you could attach yourself to one person to haunt forever. Who would you haunt?
I want to know your answers to all of these.
This is why we'd be friends and we can meet up. These are exactly the reasons. These are great questions, and these
are
better
than
anything I was coming up with.
Demented icebreakers. I mean,
get right into it. The ghost thing is great. Okay. Bill Gates is single. Would you swipe? Which way would you swipe on Tinder?
I'm a straight woman. I've never, you know, thought of my sexuality as anything but straight. And I would pick Melinda. Melinda's so much sexier than Bill. So much more alluring.
Who would you swipe on and which way would it go?
I would swipe in the yes direction. It's right. I would swipe right for Melinda and left for Bill.
I love the way you just answered so earnestly. It was like, this was a question for this was a question for when we meet up.
Well, I might change my answer then. I'll think about it.
I'd swipe right on both and like shoot your shot. Like, just see what happens.
Wow, Priyanka, drama.
The what did you say? The I am a queen. How did she put it? The queen of drama.
I'm a queen of drama.
I am a queen of drama. Oh,
I've been awakened.
That's good.
All right, ladies, that is all the time we have for our conversation today. Keep banking your demented icebreaker questions. I encourage everybody to bank.
I feel like this could be like a game, like a card thing.
It's such a good one. I would actually love to hear hysteria listeners like reply to the pod demented in the comments.
You know what?
What are ways post-pandemic to open a conversation with people you haven't seen that won't lead them to saying bad? Mm-hmm. The answer is bad. I've been bad.
Right.
You know,
what's a random act of hostility that you think about doing a lot? I think about like letting the air out of like a giant SUV's tires. I think about that. I see like a huge SUV taking up a compact car parking lot. My brain is like, I should let the air out of its tires. Never done it, but every single time I'm going to let the air out of its tires. Yeah. So anyway, demented icebreakers are a great
practice. Random acts of hostility.
Yes. Priyanka and Kieran, thank you so much for stopping by. Thank you to Alyssa Mastromonaco for being my ride or die. Thank you to Senator Mazie Hirono for joining, I think, the four-peat guest club. She's been on here four times, which is like incredible. And thanks to you, the listeners. If you like what you're hearing, please rate us and tell your friends and have a great week. There will be more hysteria for you next Thursday. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Rustin is our producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer, and Brian Semmel is our associate producer. Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer, and our editor is Sarah Gibble-Laska and the folks at Chapter 4. Our digital team is Nar Melkonian and Magic Groot. Thank you to Juliet Beckstrand for production support every week.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.